Euro 2012 Football Daily with James Richardson from The Guardian.
It's back, like three-man defences, Rooney's hair and French infighting, our Euro 2012 daily roundup. Today, Portugal, Czech Republic. Portuguese book place in semi against Czech side that spent less time on attacks than Jimmy Carr. Slick at the front, good shape at the back, and that was just Chris's haircut. The pod gives its view on the Lusitanians' chances from here on in. Then we turn to the big grudge game in Gdansk. Germany, Greece. Not much riding on that one then. All of that coming up in today's Football Daily. Woo! Here it is then, Football Daily. Back in action after those exciting group stages with the first of the quarterfinals. Paul Doyle barely able to contain himself. Paul, hi.
Hey, how are you doing, see? James? How are you?
Right. Struggling to express my enthusiasm in
You're struggling
words.
To answer, yeah.
Yeah, I am. Amy!
Hello.
Amy Lawrence. Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Wow. Well, there you go. The first of the quarterfinals is just in. And if the others live up to it, we're in for a pretty special first round of knockout games, I would say. And, of course, the evening was all about Cristiano Ronaldo. He scored the winner. My question is, yeah, but how many would Messi have got? Right, Amy? Right?
I was thinking about this watching. I think there is a slightly weird media obsession about the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo... I know you're joking. Yeah. I know you were joking. But there is this notion that he has to somehow win an international tournament to prove himself a great player, which strikes me as slightly unfair, really. I mean, there are lots of very, very good players who haven't won international tournaments and lots of not-so-very good players who have. Mm. I mean, if you... think back to the Greece side of 2004, for example. How many of that team now do you remember as legends?
The Greece 2004 side?
Yeah.
It's difficult because the name is involved, isn't it? Karagounis.
You remember them collectively, which is quite fitting because that's
this is
the
nothing
way
against
played.
That team, who I think achieved something fantastic, obviously. But when I was thinking about it at home for coming in, I thought, okay, the goalie that looks like George Clooney, Haristeas, who scored lots of goals, a few goals anyway. And I remember that Basinas, who was the sort of slightly balding James, but quite stylish midfield player, who then went to Portsmouth and was really notably nothing like the player that was in the Euro. But
for them,
my
it's
point
a team
is
thing.
That, of course it is.
But a Ronaldo, a side that involves Ronaldo, could you ever think of them in the same terms?
Well, I just think that it's unfair that people, you know, there were people that were on the commentary straight after he scored that goal, more or less, who were talking about, will this be the year that Cristiano Ronaldo wins an international tournament and therefore finds greatness? And I just don't think that's entirely fair. Well, they seem to think that there was a chance that that might happen, which, of course, it might. But I don't think that it's just on the basis of that because, you know, we're not talking about tennis or golf or any other individual sport. We're talking about a team sport. And however good he is or can be for his team, it's not all, you know, he cannot do it on his own.
Have you let Cristiano Ronaldo know about this? I only say that and it's going to sound churlish, but because he doesn't seem entirely from the same species as, say, you and I, or you even, Paul Doyle. Just because he's an extraordinary footballer. A, as an athlete, he's quite remarkable, obviously. He's an absolutely extraordinary footballer. But there's something entirely Borg-like about his reaction to any... moments that inspire joy and great sense of conviviality among everybody else in the stadium will affect him in an entirely different way. You were talking about this just now, the moments when we in Portugal have had last-minute success and they're all piling on top of each other, except for Cristiano Ronaldo.
Yeah, the winning goal against Denmark being the prime example. When he was the closest player to Valera, who the youngster would come off the bench and scored this last-minute winner. And while everyone else converged on the scorer and jumped on top of him, guys were pouring off the bench to jump on top of him, Ronaldo just stood there by himself, almost unhappy at not being the centre of attention, which we may be doing him a disservice there, but that's what it looked like.
It just does seem to be an entirely different software that he runs on, or that he's starring in his own very, very personal silent movie about a... you know, Valentino-esque striker.
In fairness to him, though, I think he did play very well tonight.
Yes.
And he actually was on the ball for 5 minutes in total, which for a 90-minute match is a very high percentage. Players don't normally spend that time. Although, funnily enough, Nani spent almost as long on the ball, and he actually received more passes than Ronaldo. But he had nowhere near as big an impact as Ronaldo did.
All right.
Also, just the comparison to Messi, who's obviously a great player, Messi, I don't think, would have scored that winning goal that Ronaldo got.
Why? Because it was a header or what?
But yeah.
He has scored headers, of course.
He has scored a goal in the Champions League final, but I haven't seen him score a sort of diving header like that before, getting on the end of crosses, with that one obvious exception.
Yeah. Now, it was an interesting game, this, because if you wanted to look at Portugal and what are their likely prospects, and to what extent, how do we evaluate them beyond the Ronaldo phenomenon? Because Czech Republic make it very difficult to draw conclusions, and to a large extent they weren't there as a footballing team in 50% of the usual notion.
Portugal have played very well in the previous matches as well.
Oh right, sorry, Amy was just having misadventure. I hadn't been over here. Yeah, sorry.
But Portugal have played very well in the previous matches as well against stronger opposition, notably against Holland. And of course, they're not a one-man team, because Nani, although he wasn't at his best tonight, has had a very good tournament. Mm. Contrao has had a very good tournament. Moutinho as well. Morelos, who has been panned by the commentators on TV tonight, largely I think because his shots were ridiculous. But other than that, he had a very good game, playing some nice passes. Oh, I thought he did anyway. The only slightly substandard performance they produced so far was in the first one, which was against Germany, when they seemed to be a little bit intimidated by Germany and didn't truly believe that they could win, so they set out with an unduly negative approach. Granted, they do have an excellent defence. So if they come up against Spain in the semi-final, it would be interesting to see whether the momentum they've got now on the back of some good results gives them more confidence and they'll be more assertive in that match.
Because the Czech Republic, for the first half hour or so, largely silenced to Ronaldo and indeed any kind of Portuguese aggression, but mainly by sticking loads of men on Ronaldo.
Yeah, and all over and clustering the park very deep. But Portugal didn't become impatient at any point, and they kept on going. And they have a nice diversity to their attacking. It's not just tiki-taka stuff all around the box, which obviously they can do to an extent, but they can also send crosses into the box. Unfortunately, it's usually somebody like Postiga or Almeida who's on the end of them. And again, we come back to the point that if they had a better striker, they'd be pounding teams. As it stands, they have to rely on Ronaldo to storm in from deep.
I loved the moment just in stoppage time in the first half when Ronaldo had that fantastic chance which he cushioned on his chest and then controlled so beautifully and hit against the post. And there's a shot of Almeida, I think it was, who was standing about a foot away from the goal line going like, me, pass it to me. And he gave that sort of strikerly, how can you not have given me a sitter? But then, you know...
Well, he was 6 yards from goal himself. And but although Ronaldo has this reputation as being a bit of a show-off and flamboyant and everything, there's also... there really is a certain minimalism to his game. And he's really direct. And he does often do the minimum amount of flamboyance necessary to get himself into the chance and into his space and then shoots. Mm. I think that's one of the reasons why Real Madrid won the league this year, because Karim Benzema has it as well. It keeps the game brilliant but simple, whereas Barcelona have a tendency to over-elaborate and don't have the same directness.
A little bit rococo, aren't they? Ronaldo, very unflamboyant before scoring, a little bit too flamboyant perhaps afterwards. So, Amy, you were going to say something more relevant.
I was just going to say, I'm surprised in a way with this Portugal team that they haven't at least tried, or maybe they haven't, we don't know about it beforehand, but tried playing Ronaldo up more centrally up front.
Well, that's what Paul wants, but they've tried that and he doesn't like it and etc. Is that right?
They tried it under Carlos Queiroz, tried it, and he didn't feel that he got the ball enough or early enough in the moves.
Here's top listener Barry Glendenning, who says only one penalty and lots of headed goals. Ronaldo's in fact was the 18th of this tournament. It's a huge number. Is it just a coincidence, these goal line officials being there? I don't know if there is a direct... But it's curious how no penalties, or just, you know, that first game. And then all these headed goals. Don't know what to make of that. Anyway, you say they could be facing Spain, or they France. Could be facing France. France, who've been featuring in all sorts of shock infighting stories. But it's a little bit of a... over-dramatisation, that, isn't it? They had a few words after losing Sweden, and I think you'd be more worried if they hadn't been upset by that result, no?
Yeah, I think that's a fair point.
Right. Spain, meantime, lots of questions being asked about them and the fact that they haven't been dominating, but they top every major stat. Goals conceded, i.e. fewest number. Shots on target, passes, pass accuracy, corners. So, yeah, those Spanish, eh? Woof.
I think one stat they don't top, I think, was amount of ground covered in games, despite their intense pressing and everything. I think they're third in that table, but bottom of it are France, of all 16 teams in the tournament, which suggests they're not really given 100% when it comes to chasing the ball.
This stat, how many kilometres each player runs, is it? Well, with the Spanish, you can understand they let the ball do their running or something like that, is it?
They do, but that, it's not just running with the ball, as far as I understand, and they do a lot of running off the ball.
They do, that's true.
Yeah. Euro 2012 Football Daily with AC Jimbo.
Right. Okay, well, this is the obligatory bit where we turn things back to England. How are things going in the countdown to their big quarterfinal with Italy? Especially because loads of listeners were posting in. Loads of them were saying, oh, we were so negative and mealy-mouthed about England's performance in their last group game against Ukraine. I was mystified that. I listened back to the pod specially to hear all the bits we were rude about them, and we actually weren't. Here's Mike Bowden tweeting, why do you praise Roy and England so much when we're by far the worst team at the tournament? So, really, listeners, I don't know what to say. I do think there are a lot of England fans out there who don't think England are as good as they'd like to think they are, and thus get upset when people don't go, rah, we're going to win the tournament. That's just my impression, and I could be wrong. There you go. England coming down to his Guido goal says England. His Guido goal, who says Italian Renaissance, England Runaissance. It's quite nice, isn't it? One last thing. Promising light. If the lost Sweden France chat that I mentioned, we might have lost a bit because he said, where is it all? If it didn't consist entirely of an elegy to the riddle wrapped in an enigma wrapped in a magnificent bastard that is Zlatan, I'd be very disappointed. You know what? In our last pod, we didn't devote adequate time to Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and I take full responsibility for that. Paul, you probably had loads of stuff you wanted to say about his brilliant goal against the French.
I'm trying to remember it now. Yes, no, I do remember.
Savage.
What I was particularly impressive about it, in much the same way as his best ever goal, in my opinion, one of the best ever goals in football history, I'm going to say off the top of my head, was the one he scored against Italy in this same tournament in 2004, which I can't really describe, but it shows, I think, his martial arts training in full effect, because he has this great litheness of limb that and that enables him to articulate his leg better than I can articulate this sentence, and applied a perfect finish, which he did in the other night as well with a volley that he applied with perfect power and kept it down very well by getting his leg up like a ballet dancer, or indeed a martial artist, to get back to my point.
All right. Well, we'll miss him, that's for sure. Now, next up in this exciting parade of quarterfinals is, of course, Germany-Greece. Angela Merkel will be there, as well as some of the most heavily fancied football players in this tournament. A lot of people rating the Germans. But then the Greeks know all about surprising people, causing shocks in European championships. They've produced the biggest shock in this tournament so far already against Russia. And joining us on the line from Athens is Sport 24 Stavros Drakularakos. Stavros, hello.
Hello.
Kalinikta, one more time. Kalispera, actually.
It's Kalispera, it's far better.
Right, okay, yeah, good. Now, wow, how big is this game?
Well, it's a huge game, obviously. Everybody keeps saying that, you know, it's football, it has nothing to do with politics, and let's leave politics out of it. But, you just can't escape that. It has to do with both. The Greeks are mildly optimistic, mainly because they were expecting their team to qualify to the quarterfinals. So for the Greeks, the national team is already ahead.
Right.
They've got nothing to lose. So that's where their optimism comes from.
Right, I understand that. Although all this mixing of politics, etc., and this much talked of desire for revenge on Merkel and the Germans, that is beginning to put a bit of pressure perhaps on the players.
Although the players did manage to say that, you know, we're not going to be involved in politics, we're just going to play, we're going to focus on our game. But I'm pretty sure if Greece were to qualify, I would hear a couple of political comments such as, we did it for the Greeks, we did it to give the Greek people some joy, and make everyone at home feel better. May I remind you that in 2006, Italy, who was going through a rough patch and was going through a scandal in the in their local league, also took advantage of that in terms of morale, and actually that was a boost for their morale, the fact that they won the World Cup.
Interesting.
Although we're still in the quarterfinals.
Right. Yeah. Well, so far, yeah. But Karagounis actually making the claim that beating Germany on this occasion would be more significant, did I read this, than the 2004 Euro win?
That's right, that's right. He actually said that even the fact that we go through Russia, we won Russia against Russia and then are through to the quarterfinals is a very big win. And he can only compare it to the Euro 2004 Euro win. And the reason for that is that it's a younger team. The generation of 2004 is, well, it's only Karagounis and Katsouranis and Halkias play now. So it's a new, there's a new generation coming up. And we're in the, you know, in the transition phase. So for this team to qualify the quarterfinals is actually quite a big boost. Plus the fact that things haven't been going well in Greece.
Right.
From what I gather, you've heard.
No. Sadly, yes. How much is he going to be missed, though?
Quite a bit. I don't know if you've seen, there's quite a bit of humorous gifs with him making all those funny faces, like Robert De Niro crying and comparing him to him. Well, Karagounis has been the player that, in the Greek midfield, has always provided the creative flair and also had the, let's say, the mentality, so to keep pushing, to keep going forward, even when the game was not going in Greece's direction.
And right.
Also, in the Euro 2004 final, Karagounis was absent because of, let's all guess, yellow cards.
Mm. Yeah, bit of a pattern there. Well, listen, when people are talking about this quarterfinal, nobody seems to give Greece a chance. But how do you think they might pull a surprise on Germany?
I'd say, well, it's the game plan is tighten the defense, and then try and squeeze a goal. That's it. As simple as that. It worked wonders in 2004. It did get them through to the Euro this year's tournament and through to the quarterfinals. Now I'm very, very curious to see what Greece has, what Fernando Santos, the Greek coach, the coach of the Greek team, has planned as a plan B, meaning what happens if Germany goes ahead. I think in that case, we may see a bit of the young prodigy, Sotiris Ninis, who had just signed from Panathinaikos to Parma in Italy, coming into the midfield and getting some creativity onto our attacking side.
All right, Stavros, Faristo very much for joining us at this
later. Thank you very much
later.
As well.
And I think a lot of people are going to be wishing you a lot of luck, you collectively in the nation, and why not you as well. And
Thank you very much.
Hopefully we'll be speaking to you further down the line.
Ah, that'd be fantastic. And my pleasure.
Us too. Thank you very much, Stavros.
Good night.
Hey, Greece have had the fewest shots on target at Euro 2012. 5. Ronaldo, by contrast, has had, I think, is it 29 or 30? Something like that. But also allowed their opponents the joint fewest. That's interesting, isn't it? Well, here is something that is even more interesting. Raphael Honigstein.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. What's going on at your place, Rafa?
It's not my place. I'm just leaving the stadium.
Oh, are you at the stadium? Of course you are. Yeah, you've been at the game, haven't you? All right. What did you think of the game, Rafa?
I think it was a bit of a letdown. I think the Portuguese didn't do themselves justice in the first half. I think they made the Czechs look like a super organised, great defensive side, which they're not. In the second half, they played with a lot more composure and got the goal that they richly deserved. I think 10-0 chances, what did they have? I mean,
yeah.
It was very one-sided.
It certainly was. You were there at the stadium trying to trick your mind off the build-up to this incredibly nervous occasion for you and Germany in general tomorrow, no? Everything to lose for Jogilov's side.
Everything to lose, you are right. Very little to win, apart from, of course, perhaps scoring early and then finding the spaces that so far have been denied to this German team in this competition. Thomas Müller making the point that teams in the Euro is much better organized than some teams in the World Cup, which is the main reason, in his view, why Germany haven't been that fluid and that exciting.
Right.
And he was saying something very funny. He was saying, no one runs around like kindergarten here. And in the sentence before, he'd mentioned Argentina, so I think the implication is pretty clear.
Why, it's not clear enough for me, unfortunately, Rafa. Can you
Diego Maradona is no tactical genius, perhaps.
Ah, right, okay. That team runs around.
Misunderstood tactical genius.
Right, okay. Rafa, I don't know if you've seen, but certainly the English media are treating this as a clear win for Germany. There's no question about it, Germany going to go through. Is there the same expectation in Germany?
There is. I think the public are more optimistic and more sort of sure of this result than even the team. I think the team, after what happened to them against Denmark, where they very nearly, well, not nearly, but almost, possibly, could have conceded the goal and get knocked out, know that it's a tricky kind of fixture for them, because they won't allow any space. They'll slow things down. They did a great job, the Greeks, against Russia, sort of almost putting everyone to sleep and then hitting with a real sucker punch. And it's going to be tricky, and there is a sense that because the public expectation is such that this is really a walkover, that the team themselves know this is actually a very bad position to be in, because both the Greeks will be even more fired up for that, and also they themselves know that if, unless they win 2-3-0, it's going to be seen as a disappointment, which is a difficult place to start with before kickoff.
Rafa, would it really be seen as a disappointment if Germany went through 1-0 and were in the semi-final? Seriously?
A little bit. I mean, Thomas Müller was talking about this week, saying, he doesn't quite understand why people have been so critical. Certainly in Germany, they've said, yeah, it's great. It's gone through three wins in a tricky group. That's well done. But people have sort of asked, why isn't this Germany team so as exciting as they were in 2010? Why aren't they firing on all cylinders? Podolski's been criticized because he hasn't scored. Özil has been criticized because he's sort of drifting in and out of games. Schweinsteiger, people saying, yeah, he had one good game against the Dutch, but where was he in the other? So, and the same, Gomez, two good games, but on one less. So there isn't really that kind of sense of euphoria. There's still a sense that perhaps this team hasn't quite hit the heights. But some people see that in a good way, of course. The team is still growing and progressing. But I think a lot of people are watching this team and thinking, after all the hype that we ourselves bought into, the team haven't quite done it yet.
All right. If they're already thinking about the semis, some of the media and public, etc., Rafa, who do you think they want to face there? Would they prefer Italy or England in the semis?
I think they would much prefer Italy for the reason that it has a much bigger resonance when it comes to the rivalry, and they would knock Italy out for once. I mean, they're the bogey teams of bogey teams, as far as Germany concerned. Never, ever beaten them in an international tournament. And, they are, with the greatest of respect, perhaps not the best Italy side ever. So I think Germans would love to have that last sort of monkey on off their back,
right,
if they get a chance to beat them. If it's England, 2010 and all that, but it wouldn't be quite the same sensation, I think, or the same excitement as the realistic prospect of sort of overcoming their last big massive enemy that they have in world football.
Interesting. All right, Rafa, well, listen, you enjoy yourself there with the traffic in Warsaw, and get back
home.
Thank you
very much.
Yeah, no problem. And you're heading off to Gdansk tomorrow, are you?
Indeed, yes.
Brilliant. All right. Well, not sure if we'll be able to catch up with you, what with your filing duties and the like, but to look forward to speaking to you again soon.
Thank you, James.
Thank you, Raphael. And with that, he was gone. There you go. And that's it for today's Football Daily. There'll be another one along tomorrow, not surprisingly, looking back on that Germany thing and looking forward to, France-Spain. Woof. All right. In the meantime, we're going to shut up shop. Many thanks to producer Pete, who was guest producing in producer Ben's shoes today, Paul Doyle and Amy Lawrence, and of course Stavros and Rafa, and you very much the listener. Bye for now.
Euro 2012 Football Daily. Woof.